This is a Pain Artistry production.
We are two women in academia,
raising questions and breaking down perceptions
from a Black point of view. Welcome to the Black Gaze Podcast.
It's your girl, Dr. Porcher.
And it's your girl, Dr. Bertrand.
Dr. Bertrand, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about the myth and complexities of the Black teacher shortage.
Oh, girl, this is going to be good.
And it's juicy.
It's going to be good. It's deep. Isn't it deep?
It's deep. Profound.
Okay. It's profound. All right. So, but before we get started, we want to make sure that we honor our OGs as we do all the time. So I want you to honor some of the Black teachers that have helped you do this work. Go ahead.
All right. So as I'm thinking about the OGs, I don't have just one. I'm going to be honest with you, Dr. P. I have a couple because I looked back over my life and I thought things over. Amen.
Honey,
I got a testimony. Come on now. I had at least four Black teachers that I can remember. So I'm going to say a solid four that have been so instrumental in my life without me even knowing it until I developed into the woman that I am and the educator that I am today. I had Miss McKeever, who was my seventh grade teacher, girl. She used to hit us with, "I ain't in the mood for your attitude." And I was like,
"Ugh."
Then I had Miss Blue, who was my science teacher in high school. And I had Miss Purcell. My mom was in the military, and I moved to Fort Bragg, Fayetteville for a little while. And I had Miss Purcell in seventh grade for the short period of time I was there. And she was just so phenomenal. She did things for us that just were life skills. She took us to Fayetteville State University to learn and see what it was like to be at an HBCU. This is seventh grade. You taking us on a bus to an HBCU. So it was just things like that to get us to be motivated. And then I had Miss Carter, which I really didn't think about this until the other day. She was my only Black art teacher. Miss Carter was just a ray of sunlight, honey. Like, I just liked her because she had the style, you know, she had that artsy appeal. But when I think about it, I'm like, how often do you get a Black art teacher at your high school? So those are my honoring of the OGs because those were women who I saw as educators who paved the way. So shout out to Lumberton for developing these great teachers.
Come on, Lumberton. So I just want you all to understand, because you know that this Dr. Bertrand, she always talks about when I have more than one person. This child here, she just named out four people. So in the future, if I have multiple people that I want to honor, just remember that Dr. Bertrand had four. She had four.
But last episode, you said that Black people are a collective. So I was just living out the vision that you set forth on episode 3. So don't try to come for me on episode 4 because I'm living out the vision. That's all I got to say.
Ooh, write you the vision, make it play.
Come on, Habasa.
So now, since you have 4, I'm going to add some people.
Oh.
Yes, I am. I'm going to add. But the two people that I want to add, they're not the only Black teachers that I've had, but they had such a huge impact on my life. The first one is Mrs. Sutton. Miss Sutton was she wasn't even my teacher. She was the music teacher. And honey, we used to be singing those Negro spirituals. Do you remember?
Y'all sang.
Singing them down, honey. All right. Acapella and everything. All right. But I met Mrs. Sutton in elementary school, and I remember when I got to high school, I met this woman. Her name was Deborah Sellers, and she was our high school counselor. And as you can see, my experiences with Black people in education wasn't so much my teachers. They were just pivotal people in the school that didn't really connect with me unless I had, you know, a connection to them. So I remember walking into Miss Deborah Sellers' office one day, and I just looked down at her and I was like, oh my gosh, you remind me of this lady named Miss Sutton who used to be my music teacher. And she said, that's my aunt. I said, what?
Wow.
Yes, that's her aunt. So they're my family now, and I'll have to talk about them on another podcast, but I just wanted to shout out Miss Sutton and Miss Deborah Sellers. But my third person, because remember you have four, okay?
I'm not hating, go ahead.
My third person, I'm going to shout her out because she is the woman who taught me how to be a Black teacher. And her name is Dr. Gwendolyn Middlebrooks, a professor at Spelman College. I believe she has retired now. However, she was a person who taught me how to be comfortable in my skin as a Black teacher and the importance and weight of being a Black teacher. So there were only four or five of us in the secondary education program. And I'll never forget. I said, Dr. Middlebrooks, the teacher during my student teaching, I said, the teachers are dressing down. Can I dress down on Fridays? Because you say we got to wear these dress up clothes every day. She said, are you a teacher, Miss Woods? I said, no, ma'am. She said, so you don't dress down. But shout out to Spelman College's teacher education program, because that was the space where I really learned how to be a culturally relevant teacher. Like, they were teaching us about culturally relevant pedagogy in 2004. And I know it's a huge buzzword now in teacher education, but they were putting us on a long time ago. But they really focused on the type of disposition that you must have as a Black teacher. And Dr. Gwendolyn Middlebrooks made sure that we understood that there were other Black children that were waiting on us to show up, and we had to show up as our best selves. So shout out to Dr. Middlebrooks.
Shout out to Dr. Middlebrooks. And let me tell you, Dr. P, one thing that I love about you and your experiences is how you talk about Spelman. Like, you make me, I'm Wolfpack all day. Come on, NC State. You make me be like, dang, I wish I would have went to an HBCU, but that's okay. I got two daughters. They coming for you, Spelman.
They coming, honey. Coming they for coming. Your
yes.
They coming.
So what we got next? What's the next part of our segment?
So before we go into the history of Black teachers, we have to talk about our own personal experiences as Black teachers, because yes, we are in academia now, but we started our careers as Black teachers. So go ahead, Dr. Bertrand, tell us about your experience as a Black teacher.
I actually, I ain't gonna tell you a lie. I was blessed to become a teacher. This was not my first career choice. I actually wanted to be a sports agent. So I actually have a degree in sports management for my bachelor's degree. So becoming a teacher wasn't my choice initially. But when I came across, I just was working and I was like, how can I give back? And I became a teacher because that's what I felt like I could have the largest impact. And when I did that, I first ended up at Dumfries Elementary School in Virginia. And
come on,
some people say Dumfries, it's Dumfries. But anyway,
I'm glad you let me know, because it is spelled like Dumfries.
It is. But this is the craziest thing. I entered into this school space. Actually, I did my practicum there, and I started harassing the principal so that I could get a job. So eventually, I got hired. And when I was there, you're talking about the mecca of Black teaching. There are probably 80% or more of the teachers in that building. The principal was Black. The office staff, for the most part, was Black. The teaching staff was majority Black. And I'm just telling you, the things that happened in that building were incredible. You saw teaching at its finest. It was a connection that these teachers had. And when I joined in, I became part of that. And what I realized is this was pretty much the best representation of Black excellence I had ever witnessed in my life. Students were learning. I'm talking about students from the hood that people would write off and say, these kids are smart. We nurtured these babies. We made sure that we gave them a vision. We gave them hope. We gave them inspiration. And the biggest thing that we gave them is a visual of what it means to be Black. Because we were standing in front of Black children and we were just giving them the way. Now, did we all love and like each other as teachers? Heck no. But we were all on the same mission. And I think that was my experience as being a Black teacher. It started at Dumfries and then now it continues today. What about yourself?
Myself. So the thing about me, and my mother will tell you, I have been teaching since I can remember. My siblings was not about that life. when I started to go to school, then I wanted to come home and decided that I was going to teach to them, and they had had enough of teaching. But it's been in my blood since forever. But I started my teaching experience in Prince George's County Public Schools. Shout out to PG.
Come on, PG County.
And it's another space of Black excellence that people are just sleeping on. So my principal, shout out to Charles Thomas, was a Black man. All of our assistant principals were Black women. I think we might have had Black one or two Black men along the way, but our students were primarily Black. So like you said, I was in the mecca of Black excellence. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything else. Like, to be led by a Black man and to have also assistant principals that were Black. And so going into a place like Prince George's County as a first year teacher, you start to think, oh, teaching must look like this everywhere, right? Even though I was from Ohio, I'm like, okay, maybe that's just Ohio. Teaching looks like this everywhere else in the world. And I also did my student teaching in Atlanta Public Schools, where there were also a lot of Black teachers, right? And so it wasn't until I became a consultant in New York City, then I could see that there was a Black teacher shortage. And I'm putting quotation marks around that because I know we're going to go into that. But when I would go into the schools, I would see that there was a lack of melanin, and there was like this dominance of primarily white women teachers. And I'm looking back to my experiences at PG, like, we did this thing. Like, we embodied Black excellence. Why am I not seeing this every single place that I go? And I felt like, holy smokes, maybe that was just in that particular area, and this is what teaching really looks like across the nation. And so as we transition, I think it's a great opportunity for us to talk about the history of Black teachers in the United States, because when we talk about the Black teacher shortage, I think we talk about it without knowing the history and saying, hey, we need more Black teachers, but we have to talk about what happened to those Black teachers. So I'm gonna let you take that away, Dr. Bertrand.
I love what you're saying, because you have to get to the origin. If you're saying, if society is saying there's a problem with the Black teacher shortage, well, then let's go back and let's look at the origin. W.E.B. Du Bois said in a statement about desegregation in 1960, if and when they, talking about Black people, are admitted to these public schools, certain things will inevitably follow. Negro teachers will become rare and in many cases disappear. That is what we saw through history. He called it. And so down through history, as I'm researching the topic, I was reminded of the work of Vanessa Sadell Walker in her book, The Highest Potential. I was reminded of Dr. James Anderson and how he writes about Black teachers in the South. And there's several other scholars that do this work. I'm not limiting, you know, it to them, but those are ones that stood out to me. But in Southern states, during segregation, Black teachers taught Black students. Sadell Walker talks about how well students performed in Caswell County at the training school. And there are others that have spoken about this. I'm sorry. Teaching was a highly accessible and respected career for Black women. Many teacher candidates who lived in the South, they attended HBCUs. And that's why I was saying, dang, I just love how you always talk about being a Spelman woman, because HBCUs really were the places where teachers were able to flourish. Places like the Hampton Institute, the Tuskegee Institute for Valley State College. And in most cases, Black teachers had better credentials than white teachers. So they were being educated on a level that was better than their white peers that were teaching. Black teachers never really had like the creme de la creme spaces. A lot of times they were teaching in poor workplaces with bad conditions. They didn't have adequate resources, but guess what? They were making it do what it does, because that's the magic of being Black. I sometimes believe that. But here's what happened. Brown versus the Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, 1954. Everybody is like, you know what? That's the case. That's the case that, you know, integrated. But I would argue that maybe that case did more harm than good for some of us, because what we witness here is the beginning of the loss of Black teachers. I mean, they were losing jobs. Tens of thousands lost their jobs in a result of the ruling in the desegregation. I remember in the book, The Lost Education of Horace Tate by Vanessa Sedell Walker, where she tells the story of a Black man in North Georgia who became a principal for 14 years. And once the school district began to integrate, those principals, they transferred at least half the students, half the teachers. They docked their salary by $3,000. And eventually, the principal lost his students, lost a job, and then was transferred to the superintendent's building. And he was given a windowless room and an attic as an office. And then he finally just turned in his resignation, because here you got an educated Black man who was running a school, now doesn't have anything. And so what people don't realize is, prior to the Brown decision, that 17 states that were segregated, 35 to 50% of those teachers were Black people. So Black people were flourishing as teachers. Like when we talked about last episode, thriving, I want to say Black education was thriving at that time. So here we are now, right? Now the word on the street is that there's a shortage. And when you look at the statistics, 8% of the teaching force are people of color. And this is according to the Department of Education report, the Racial Diversity in Educator Workplace. But what we don't talk about are the factors that impact why there aren't Black teachers. There's things like standardized testing. And Linda Tillman even talked about that. She found that between 1984 and 1989, about 21,500 Black teachers were displaced because of new requirements for teacher education programs and certification. I don't know about you, Dr. Porcher, but for me, the practice was, it gave me the business, because a lot of that very much so wasn't anything that I was accustomed to with the way that they asked the questions, the information that they wanted. It was just not what, you know, I felt was helping me. And what did it have to do with what I was going to be able to do in the classroom? I don't know. The next part to that is that other fields are providing more financial stability for our Black candidates. Other fields are willing to pay off student loan debt. Other fields are offering a higher salary. So a lot of times you have to make a decision that I'm going to go where I'm appreciated and not where I'm tolerated. And education doesn't make it very open for Black teachers to thrive. What you got? What you think? What do you think about all of this?
So this is the big thing. So just to sum up what you said, when we talk about the Black teacher shortage, we have to make sure that we insert a quarter and park at that meter and say, park no, there. Actually, those people were pushed out. And that's why we have a lack of Black teachers and a lack of Black administration across the country. I think that's the conversation that's missing, because now what we're presenting it as is Black people just don't want to become teachers, but we don't want to have the conversation about how we, one, kick them out after desegregation, and two, how there's all these barriers and blocks that are in place that keep Black people from going into teaching. But I think it's extremely important for us to, of course, give our preaching points and advice, because it's important for Black people to be in the classroom, but we have to have an honest conversation that if you're going to enter this space, what you need to do.
Absolutely.
And so I love that you started off with W.E.B. Du Bois, and I'm just going to insert Martin Luther King here, because everybody likes to talk about the I Have a Dream King.
Yeah.
No one likes to talk about I'm afraid I have integrated my people into a burning house king, right?
Come on, talk about
And so listen, when I think about us recruiting more Black teachers, I think about the fact that when we're talking about them going through a teacher preparation program, I feel that we're integrating them into a burning house. Seriously. Yes. Especially if we are sending them into primarily white spaces, right? Where in white teacher education programs, they still have to deal with racism. They still have to deal with white supremacy. They still have to be isolated as one of very few Black people in the program. And so I'm all about recruiting more Black teachers, but if we're going to do it, we're going to have to address these issues that exist in these primarily white institutions that really isolate Black people and keep them from being able to get through the program. So that's the first thing. So let us not integrate our Black folks into these burning homes. Let's do the work on these teacher preparation programs first before they come.
I like
that. I know folks might feel a way about this, but as you talked about earlier, I went to a historically Black college. And so my experiences with teacher preparation is very different from my colleagues who went to primarily white institutions. And I know there has been this conversation that the grass is greener on the other side, but we have to have a conversation about how these institutions were created for us, right? Mm-hmm, and so these were spaces that we had to go to when they were not letting us into the primarily white schools. And so I always tell people, you might want to consider a historically Black college or university, especially if you're interested in becoming a teacher, because in those spaces, they're going to teach the history of Black education like we know about it, and they're going to give you more information than you're going to get with just learning about Vygotsky or Piaget. No, they're going to teach you about the Black educators that were doing this work prior to you ever coming. And so this is a space where it's like, I know that finances play a huge part to why a lot of Black people have to go to predominantly white institutions, but I need you to start asking them critical questions before you decide to sign your name on the dotted line to say, hey, this is where I want to go. So if you attend a white dominated institution, that's what I'm going to call it, I want you to ensure that there is support for Black teachers. When you sign up, ask to have an informational interview with the teacher education program. Ask them, are there any supports for Black teachers when I get here? And let me not forget the coins. Do you have any money when I come here? Because I know there are not, listen, there are not a lot of Black people here. And in order for Black people to be able to stay, because I mean, we're looking at this now we're experiencing this now during the pandemic. A lot of my students of color are now working full time because their parents have lost jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're like, I have to step up and I have to support. So are there any coins in place to support Black teachers in these white dominated spaces? And also, y'all know we are an investigative type of people, honey. We will get on Instagram and play detective for you and find out all the details.
What?
I need you to find out all the details about this program before you get there. Ask them, hey, I want to talk to the Black students here. I want to talk to the Black professors here. I want to talk to them about the experiences of students who go through this program. And you know, we real good. We'll give you that ad like, honey.
Don't you
come here. And also ask the students, what type of jobs were you able to get when you left this program, right? Because that's important. A lot of us cannot afford to go into a program where we are not guaranteed a job. And so you want to know if the teacher preparation program is setting you up for those opportunities once you get there. So ask them, where'd you get a job? Who supported you in your interview process? Did they go over resume writing? Did they assist with EdTPA? You want to ask those type of questions up front. And then once you get into schools, because as Dr. Bertrand and I talked about, we started our teaching careers in all Black spaces, right? Where there were Black administrators, there were Black teachers. When you interview for positions, they are not interviewing you. You are interviewing them. Ask them what type of support is provided for Black teachers? If we know there is a Black teacher shortage, what are you doing to keep them in the profession? Ask those conversations when you go for your interviews. Furthermore, if you like Dr. Bertrand and I, we talk about racism. We talk about social justice. We talk about youth advocacy. Ask them, will it be a problem if I'm teaching my students about this? Because it's one thing to get you in the door, but if you're really about liberating Black children and making sure that they're free in their bodies, you have to have conversations about white supremacy. Mm-hmm. You have to talk about police brutality, and you have to make sure that that school is comfortable with you having that conversation. So these are the types of questions that you ask in your interviews. And then I'm going to just go back to episode one.
Come on.
When you get these opportunities, are you in a space where you can create community with other Black teachers? That is so important. You cannot do this work by yourself. Do not isolate yourself. Get you a squad and y'all tear it up. All right? So look around and see who can I connect with. Make sure you're asking the right questions and make sure you're not integrating yourself into a burning home.
I love this. This is so helpful. And as I'm listening to you, I'm even thinking as my role as a professor, things that I need to go back to my institution and have a conversation with those who are in a position to make change. I need to have a conversation about how are we, because I always say I am not recruiting a Black student because I don't know that we have the support to give them for them to be successful. But you have named so many great things that we can do even as a department. When students are coming in for visits, why aren't we setting them up with other Black students so that they can have a one-to-one conversation about how things are on campus? I mean, I love this. And even for those who are not in academia, your points resonate with me because this is something that I think Black teachers, what I struggle with when I left Dumfries and I went to a different school that was a predominantly white school, there was maybe four of us, maybe five, and I'm including the custodian. And I think what was important for me is to find that community. And not only was it that, I was the only Black person teaching on my team. So I had to be kind of a trailblazer. And sometimes you might not have the community in the building, but I found that community outside of the building. And I think that if you can't find it in those walls, I don't want people to walk away thinking that, oh, because I'm Black and there's no other Black people there, they don't want to take a job. Take the job, but find your community outside that will support you and help you navigate. And as you're in that position, then call other Black folks like, we hiring, come on over here. So I think, oh my God, Dr. Fortune, you just sat here and spoke a word today, honey. Somebody get the pastor some water.
I think this information is also important for people who are going to any institution, right? Even if you're not becoming a teacher, like I always tell my parents, because I taught 12th grade. So I would always tell my parents when they were really big on saying, I'm going to this predominantly white institution, I would tell them, I want you to look up the data and I want you to tell me how many Black men graduated in 4 years, not how many were accepted, how many actually graduated in 4 years. Because it's one thing to be a diversity count, there's another thing to actually graduate. And so we have to hold these institutions accountable that if we're going to go there, what type of support are you going to provide, what kind of coins do you have, and what is the success rate of the people who have come through this institution? I feel like every single person should be having those conversations. Yes, it's great to be able to go to these institutions, but they need you just like you need them. So make sure you're asking the right questions, I think is extremely important.
And for the parents that are listening, I yesterday told my daughter she's doing a summer project and she's going into ninth grade. So if you have anybody, I would say eighth and up, consider one of the things that I'm asking her to do is choose five universities that she's interested in. I want her to tell me, come on, you know, Howard is dear and near to her heart. So if somebody at Howard, I ain't trying to have a
what's the number one HBCU, honey?
I'm not trying to have a varsity blues scandal, but y'all, if you at Howard, let us know.
It's all good, Howard. It's all love.
But one of the things I asked her to do is I said, I want you to give me five universities that you're interested in applying to. Out of those five universities, I want you to tell me why you're applying to them. I want you to talk about the demographics of that university, what it takes to get into that institution. How does that institution support Black people in general? But then also, how does that institution support you throughout your time there so that you're able to graduate? What programs and what things are you going to be able to participate that's going to help you be who you need to be? So I think that while we're talking about it from different perspectives, parents, there's work that we could be doing right now to help us have our students to begin to understand why I chose and why I want to go into these institutions.
Yes. And I can't wait until we have our session with parents because that's going to be good.
Oh, I love it.
As we close out, what you reading though, Dr. Bertrand? What are you reading right now?
Oh my goodness. So actually last week I felt terrible because I didn't read nothing. But this week, honey, I've been on the ball. I have been on the ball. I ordered the new book Stamped by Jason Reynolds and Kenzie. So I have the original Stamped from the beginning, but this one right here, honey, this puts it in plain. Look, they made it plain, like the Bible said.
They made it plain
for your girl. I just finished section one last night. Like, I honestly had to tell myself, put it down, because the history that is the way he breaks it down in the book, Jason Reynolds does, and it was like water. I mean, I'm sipping it. So me and my daughter are actually doing a book study on it. So I read section one. Now she's going to read it, and then we're going to talk about it.
Nice.
And so that's one. For Kennedy, because she's my youngest baby, and this is for those those mommies and daddies who have younger children or guardians who have younger children. I read the other day Lulu, the One and Only, and this was written by my homegirl, Lynette. She's going to be mad because I'm about to mess up that last name, Mawini. And this was such a great book. It talks about her being biracial, Lulu, and people asking, you know, what are you, or this, that, and the other. But the thing that I got from this is me and Kennedy had such a great conversation on race. It really got us to have this powerful conversation using a children's book. And I was so impressed with my baby on how she sees the world and how she has just taken up what racism is and what means to be Black. And it just led to a great discussion. So those are my two books that I'm reading. What you reading, though?
Did y'all notice she had two things again? I'm just, you know, I'm keeping count.
The Lord is fruitful, honey. He is blessing and multiplying. So don't you hate because he's blessing his brain today. Okay, next week I'll stick to the rules. Anyway, hater, what you reading, though?
Shout out to Kennedy and Ariana. I just want to, you know, shout you out before I talk about what I'm reading. Just how intentional you are about spending time with your babies and reading with them and having critical conversations. I feel like books open up the doorway to have some conversations that we might be trying to have and kids ain't really trying to listen to us. Shout out to my niece who won't be trying to listen to me. But when we read books together, Radia, she don't be listening to me. But when we read books together and she sees it from a different point of view, it just opens up the discussion. So shout out to you.
Oh, thank you.
So ironically, because we are what? Friends. We are reading the same thing. I'm starting the beginning of Stamped and I haven't read the entire thing. But for me, because we're doing this podcast and I've kind of really been on this for a while, is that I feel like we can't really operate in the world until we know who we are.
Oh, yes.
And so I have been very intentional on trying to pick up books that really show our history in different ways that's written by Black people. Maurice actually has the original stamp book. And when I saw the length of it, I said, oh, Lord.
Girl, ain't it long?
It's big long. Okay. So, but I do want to read them. I actually want to put them side by side, but I actually recommended this book to my girlfriend too. So I'm excited to read it. But I'm also excited to just learn more about who we are and the way we show up in the world to inform the practice that we're doing here on the Black Gays podcast. But to move on, because I'm going to have more people than you. Let's go to our next segment. I see you. And so this is an opportunity for us to recognize Black teachers that we see out here just killing the game. So Dr. Bertrand, who do you have?
I see you. Okay. I know she's about to say something, but anyway, I just want to shout out. I got
to see this list.
No,
oh my
I'm not giving individual like testimonies. I'm just shouting out some because we're talking about Black teachers, the myths and complexities, and we're highlighting Black teachers.
Yeah, so and
it was Teacher Appreciation Week. Let me just be great. So I see you. I want to just shout out the teachers that I taught with at Dumfries. They're still teaching, most of them. And I just want to acknowledge your value and what you meant to me as I was developing and coming along. And for some of y'all, we don't even talk anymore, and it's all good. But I still see you on Facebook and Instagram doing your thing. So Jock Smith, Alexia Coutain, Priscilla Nelson, Tanya Woods, Nita Creekmore, Tiana Newman, Jamila Hernandez, Nisha Berno, Pam Wright, Tasha Johnson, Mignon Jones-Span. I see you and I thank you for what you are doing for children, what you specifically are doing for Black children. Nobody is coming to save us, but y'all are doing the work that can help us to move forward and to bless our children. So I see you and I thank you. And I made it quick, even though I had like 9-10 people. Who are you shouting out today?
So I'm going to follow the expectations.
Baby,
shout out to the Dumfries team, though. Dumfries teachers killing it. So the first person I see you. I'm going to get personal. This is my cousin, Crystal Watson. Mm-hmm. She is a middle school teacher in Cincinnati Public Schools. And when was that? I don't remember the, you know, it's the pandemic, so I don't really understand.
Your memory's gone because of the pandemic?
My memory's gone. Okay. And part of the PhD too, the PhD. So I popped up on her one day. Actually, it was in January. It came to me in her classroom, and her students were taking an assessment, right? And they were, I mean, you saw them babies was just like, when is this assessment going to be over? They was asking her questions. She's like, get done, get finished. But when they got done, something happened that just gave me so much joy. So when they got done, she said, okay, is everyone done? And they were like, yeah, we done. She said, okay, celebrate. She turns on the music. Girl, these babies got on the table, chairs, everything, I doing their little dances. I was just like, who creates a positive culture around assessments? Like, she took the opportunity to celebrate them, even though they had went through a challenging experience. So I just want to say, Cuzzo, Crystal Watson, girl, I see you,
Crystal
out here
Watson,
killing the game.
I see you.
And then the next person that I want to shout out is Candace Harden. She is an elementary teacher in Louisville, Kentucky. And let me just say, if you've read Christopher Emden's work on Pentecostal pedagogy, honey, she embodies that thing, embodies it.
Come on, Candace.
In her classroom, students are engaged in talk moves. And you know, as Black people, we talk with our hands, like we will get in there, okay? But she uses talk moves for students to be able to respond to one another. She also uses a lot of call and response, which is a big part of our culture. And they use the beating of the drum to engage in call and response. And it is just such a lively experience. But I love that she has integrated integral parts of our Black community in her classroom, because you know a lot of things about the Black culture is not welcomed or shunned in classrooms. So I just want to say, Candace Harding, girl, I see you with the Pentecostal pedagogy.
I see you.
All right, y'all. So we have come to the end of our podcast, but don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on all the podcast platforms so that you are first to know every time a new episode drops. We love feedback, so leave us some feedback. Rate us all 5 stars, of course. Like, give us all 5 stars.
Please, 5.
But follow us on Instagram at Black Gaze Podcast, and follow us on Twitter, where, Dr. B?
At Black Gaze Pod.
Now, we know y'all love us, but honey, we got to go.
Listen.
So, it's your girl, Dr. Porcher.
It's your girl, Dr. Bertrand.
And we out.
This is a Pain Artistry production.